Is it a fairer way to choose our elected officials? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect. Thanks for being with us. And just ahead this Monday morning, we're going to speak with the activists working to bring ranked choice voting to Northeast Florida. What is that? Give us a call right now. Ask your questions and join us. It's 549-2937. Then later, don't miss it, as former Jaguars quarterback Mark Brunell stops by. He's got a preview of the NFL Legends Gala. That and more coming up. But first this morning, a new push is underway here in Duval County to help improve our local elections process and voter turnout for local elections. Our local voter turnout has been dismal lately. Now, this idea is called ranked choice voting, and it's a new way of casting ballots taking off in cities around the nation. Perry Wagg and Drew Aitken are members of the Ranked Choice Voting Jacksonville Steering Committee, and they join us now. Hey, guys. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Melissa.
It's 549-2937 to join us. What are your questions about ranked choice voting? Give us a call. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. Already getting some. Our Facebook page is open, too. All right, Perry Wagg, let's begin with you. This is a new concept for this area, although a lot of other places around the country have started to go to ranked choice voting. What is ranked choice voting?
So very simply, ranked choice voting means that when you go in to vote the first time in a two-round runoff system, currently you have to pick from the first round choices, and then if no one has a majority vote, you have a second round. With ranked choice voting, or some people call it instant runoff voting, the first time you go in to vote, you say, okay, this is my first choice, this is my second choice, this is my third choice, et cetera. And if you don't want to rank them, you don't have to. If you just want to just pick one, you can. But that way, you don't have to come back out and vote a second time for a runoff. They tabulate it on the backside.
So you eliminate runoff elections, in
Correct.
Other words.
Correct. It's just a time-saving thing that saves everybody time and heartache of having to listen to 8 more weeks of campaigns and ads and all that good stuff.
Okay. So, Drew, why are you proposing ranked choice voting for our municipal elections here in Duval County? Why bring this to town? What's the argument for it?
Well, it's something that we expect to fully improve in a number of areas, but I think primarily it's the focus on less divisiveness, but also there's some very practical and immediate benefits to Jacksonville. In one area in particular, Jerry Holland, the former supervisor of elections here, has cited that we will save $1.2 million per election cycle by not having that second round.
By eliminating runoff elections, in other words.
Precisely.
So give me an example of how this would work. Let's say, let's revisit the last election where Mayor Lenny Curry won handily, but with very low voter turnout. If ranked choice voting had been an option, how would people have cast ballots? Give me an example of how, Joe Sixpack would have cast his ballot.
Better example actually would be, I think, Lisa King's seat. She had, I think, 42% in the first round, and then she wound up not winning because it's a majority requirement. So in the second round, there was a huge drop-off of voter turnout, and the margin that her opponent won by was far less than what the total number of people who didn't vote the second time around. So I think it lost like 15,000 voters from the first round to the second, and the person who beat her in the second round only won by a much smaller margin.
And you mentioned Lenny Curry. Actually, in looking at some of the 2015 data, when he first ran for office, there were three candidates in play. It was Lenny and Alvin Brown and Bill Bishop.
Well,
Bill Bishop, the Republican, if you looked at the second round runoff and the amount of votes that were cast for Bill Bishop the first time and what Lenny Curry received the second time, it was almost like they just took Bill Bishop's votes and added them right there. So what you would eliminate with that is everyone who, this is a nonpartisan, by the way, push that we have here. But if in this case there was an instant runoff, you might have expected that, the Republicans who voted for Bill Bishop might pick Curry as a second choice, and it would all be taken care of immediately, preventing that 2 months of seeing the campaign ads, the robocalls, and the $1.2 million expense of running a runoff election.
We're talking about ranked choice voting on the show this morning as activists work to bring it to Duval County. Other cities, even some other states, are going this route. What are your questions about it? It's 549-2937 to join us. Now, Perry, Maine is becoming the first state to adopt ranked choice voting in a presidential election. Next year, they will get to list their candidates for president by order of preference rather than just bubbling in one circle. That could have big consequences if the electoral vote is close. Maine has four electoral votes, but they split them in half by congressional district. So this new way of casting a ballot, it could make an impact in the presidential race. New York City is also looking at going to ranked choice voting. What are some other places around the country looking at this?
Yeah, so far it's being used in 26 different states, about 20 cities mostly in those states. Maine, as you said, is the first to go statewide with it for everything. That's something that, you know, we'd like to see long-term in Florida as well. The major benefit of it, too, is, you know, ranked choice voting works with a majority vote system. So you're not getting plurality winners. You're getting people that, you know, a wider segment of the population support. And the sea change that we really see happening with it in terms of changing the dialogue is, under ranked choice voting, the candidates don't really want to be negative and attack each other as much, because you might want the supporters of your opponent to list you as a second choice. Mm-hmm. So you get hopefully more issue-oriented and solution-oriented candidates who are focused on, you know, a positive, you know, message and how to solve the problems.
It requires a candidate to garner and earn broad support, not just narrow base support.
We're talking about this, too, in the context of overall election reforms in America. What do you think needs to be done to reform our election systems? Give us a call at 549-2937. We're in a highly polarized political environment. Ranked choice voting is one of the bipartisan initiatives that's taken off around the country, guys, that aims to improve the way we cast ballots. How do you see that? Can you draw bipartisan support for this idea locally?
I would think so, because there's nothing that specifically cites an advantage to one party to another. At the end of the day, it really becomes voter preference and wider voter choice. I think another area that isn't tapped into when we hear people talk about ranked choice voting is it rewards the informed and independent-minded voter. And I think in a period of highly partisan times, it's the independent-minded voter. Now, that could be somebody who's no party affiliated, which is 22% of the electorate in Jacksonville, or it could be your independent-minded Democrat or Republican. It gives them more of a voice.
What about the opposition to this? Certainly the political parties and their power structures locally are going to fight change. How are you planning to try to get this? We'd have to vote on this in a referendum, I assume. How do you even get that on the ballot for folks?
Agreed. And we definitely want this to be something that has, you know, a wide amount of buy-in across, you know, spectrum and the establishment, too. So our first choice is our first preference is to have it passed by the city council. We've reached out to them, you know, preliminarily and got some pretty good answers back. They'd at least be willing to consider it. We've been attending the Charter Revision Commission meetings, and we've been able to get it to be one of the topics they're going to vote on to decide whether to take up for the Charter Revision Commission. Our fallback is definitely to do a ballot measure if we need to for next November, and we're working on getting that in place if we need to, if the city council decides not to take it on. But Drew, okay. Anyone to add to that?
No, and I think it's, you make it difficult to argue with things like efficiency, and you kind of locally you want to hammer home the idea that it's $1.2 million per election cycle that could be saved. You want your libraries open to be more hours? Would you like to have more funding for, you know, other areas of city services and otherwise? It's tough to argue with that.
It's a rainy Monday morning, but if you're out there on the roads or listening wherever you are, give us a call. Are you a Democrat, a Republican, or an independent? Would you support ranked choice voting on local elections in Jacksonville? 549-2937. Looking at this, it looks as though Democrats more than Republicans have been pushing this in states and cities around the country and changing this in their primaries and caucuses in some states. That is happening in spots around America. When you look at the example of Maine, apparently it was Democrats who wanted ranked choice voting. Republicans opposed it, but the former governor, Paul LePage, who was controversial in Maine, won two elections without ever receiving a majority of the vote. Maine voters then went ahead and approved ranked choice voting by referendum, overruling the conservative-controlled Maine legislature. And so this is people power then. This is something that people, rather than legislators, are average folks rather than legislators, are pushing for, it seems, around America.
And we're definitely blessed to have the ability to do ballot measures either locally or statewide here in Florida. I know lots of folks around the country who live in states that don't have that, that have, they're purely at the mercy of their elected officials to do innovative things like this to try to improve elections. So I'm definitely thankful that we have that option. The one thing that's really interesting too about Maine is, you know, the total population of Maine is 1.3 million. Well, Jacksonville, we have 900,000 people here in Jacksonville, and being the largest purple city in the largest purple state in the country. And we all know the history going back to 2000 with close elections, you know, nationally and also statewide, even for governor, this most recent election. You know, it could have a really big impact of giving people better choices and making sure that we get people that have a larger base of support.
You think ranked choice voting could better reflect the will of voters in the middle of the spectrum, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. Is that fair to say? This has a history of weakening party power structures where it's been tried. Is that your goal?
It's not necessarily a goal to weaken. It's more to work with the system we have, not the system we wish it to be. And I think part of that is the fact that we live in very hyper-partisan times when party structures are actually kind of weak. They are very, the bases are very strong, but you can tell they're weak when we just had our May runoff election. You're looking at 14% turnout. Perry mentions a minute ago that about a million people, back to over 900,000, 86,000 people chose our elected officials in May in that runoff election for choices and decisions and policies that will impact a million people. That we just want to improve on that with greater voter engagement, greater voter turnout.
And to follow up on that too, the only thing you could possibly argue that ranked choice voting would help any particular segment at all would be independent candidates and smaller party candidates to be able to compete better. What you'll hopefully see is an inflection point where traditionally, as I'm sure you know, independent candidates might get someone saying like, you know, I really like your message, but I just don't think you have a chance to win, or I'm afraid that if I vote for you, this could be a wasted vote. And I really am concerned about, you know, the lesser of two evils, the other side possibly winning, so I'm not going to vote for you. So traditionally independent candidates get, you know, 0 to 15% of the vote. Well, with ranked choice voting, it's kind of risk-free. You can still rank that person first that you want to win, but then you can still list the party you lean to second. And what we really think you'll see is a kind of a leapfrogging thing, if anything, where the independent candidate goes from, you know, 15% to maybe winning.
Yep. I'm sorry, Perry and I have been kind of out and about at various locations talking to people. And one of the things you try to lead with to engage people to discuss this is, I say, have you ever held your nose and voted for someone? And that's a yes from anyone. And you say, well, then you're going to like ranked choice voting because you get to vote for who you want to, and then you can vote for a second choice if you want to avoid having another candidate win an election.
So here's one example of how that would work if Florida had ranked choice voting in 2020. Say you're a Republican who wants to vote Republican, but you are unhappy with Donald Trump's presidency. You could cast a ballot for one of his challengers as your first choice, say Joe Walsh or Mark Sanford. Mm-hmm. You could list Donald Trump second. Mm-hmm. If you're a Democrat, let's say you're a moderate Democrat. You'd rank choice your votes with Joe Biden first, and then let's say Elizabeth Warren second or Bernie Sanders second, and from there. In the primary election. That is what Maine is going to do next year, but so far that's the only state that will be doing this.
Correct.
For the presidential election. And we're getting lots of calls now as we talk with Perry Wag and Drew Aiken with the Ranked Choice Voting Jacksonville Steering Committee. They're trying to bring ranked choice voting to Jacksonville. What are your questions about this? 549-2937. Pat is on the west side. Hey, Pat, good morning.
Good morning. I am really for ranked choice voting, and I am a registered Republican. I think if we have any hope at all of getting away from controversial and divisive people in office, that we have to take this route.
Okay, thanks, Pat. That's the argument you guys are making, to pull back from partisan extremes.
Yep. That was really, you know, the small group of us, when we got together, you know, starting to work on this a few months ago, coming off of the spring elections, we were like, you know, especially for city elections. You know, we've come to accept the fact that things are going to be negative and stuff, you know, nationally, but even for city elections, for mayor and for city council, you shouldn't have all this negative, divisive stuff of painting your opponents that way. And ranked choice voting really puts a stop to all that.
Would it eliminate that, though? Would it eliminate all of the negative ads, all of the negative mailers that go out?
It doesn't eliminate, but it definitely minimizes it, and it's not rewarded. So you'd learn over a few cycles, hey, it didn't really help me to be negative.
And Perry used the word that I use the most, I think, in this, is it rewards the right behaviors. There's no panacea. There's nothing that's going to fix everything at once. This is about some structural change that will have a better long-term effect and reward more civil campaigning and the right behaviors.
Is ranked choice voting being used anywhere in Florida right now?
Well, Sarasota passed it. So it came to a vote and they passed it. Now they've been having some challenges in terms of exactly how they'll implement it. So they're working on that now.
They passed it in 2007, but their voting equipment in Sarasota didn't allow for it. They needed to be updated, so they just got new voting equipment a couple years ago, and so now the hurdle that they have the ability to do it, the Secretary of State's office has to certify voting equipment for local stuff, and there's a little bit of a, you know, back and forth between Sarasota and the state.
Do we have voting equipment that can handle ranked choice voting?
So actually Jacksonville uses ESNS, which is the same voting software company as Sarasota, and they have the ability to do it. We just don't use it yet.
Okay. 549-2937. We're talking ranked choice voting on the show this morning. Tom is on the west side. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. Yes, my question was this. I'm curious as to how this would affect big money donors.
Right. How does this affect money in politics? Thanks for that question.
Yeah, you know what? I think what it does is it can, first of all, that is an entirely separate and incredibly important reform that is absolutely necessary. And as we mentioned before, this is one reform. And I think without campaign finance reform that's real and lasting, that problem is never going to fully go away. But it gives a broader voice to a broader segment of the population. And that is what can at least help reduce the influence of big money donors, at least to some degree.
This is paired with reforming gerrymandered districts, getting money, big money out of politics, mm-hmm. campaign finance reform. It's seen as a whole suite of reforms,
correct.
Perry, to
exactly.
improve our election systems, because we're in a situation now where for a great many voters, effectively their vote doesn't really count.
Correct. It's one piece. It's just, you know, the patient is very sick, and this is one piece of it. You know, give them a blanket, get them some medicine. This is any one of those particular pieces of the puzzle that would help. And going back to, like, say, the real concrete benefits for Jacksonville and the $1.2 million it would save by eliminating that runoff round, there was 23 offices and positions up for election the first round. Only 5 went to the runoff round. And so to waste $1.2 million just for 5 runoffs, especially when there's all this talk about not wanting to have an extra election for the school board vote, because we don't want to have the time and expense of doing an election for a school board vote. Well, here's a way you can save on future elections by eliminating that. And $1.2 million is the equivalent of like 21 teacher salaries. So, you know.
Chris on the south side. Hey, Chris, good morning.
Yes, I just want to say I never compromised my integrity. I voted with my heart.
You never chose the lesser of two evils when you cast a ballot?
No, I did not.
I see. So what do you think about this option, ranked choice voting?
I think that...
Still thinking? Did we lose you? We might have lost Chris. Okay. But what about his comment? For people that always vote their conscience.
I respect that. I think that's tremendous. I think that's sometimes difficult to do. And I can tell you, when you engage on sort of a canvassing one-on-one basis with people, you find that that's maybe more the exception than the rule.
Elena on the south side. Hello, Elena. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for talking about this. I think it's a great idea. And I personally cannot stand either party. So it would be nice to vote for somebody I actually like without voting for somebody picking a lesser evil. But the question was, I think it's not like we just came up with this whole idea. Don't other countries use it for like centuries, perhaps? I think I read about Australia or somebody like that.
Yeah, do other countries use ranked choice voting? That's what you want to know, Elena?
Yep.
Yeah, yep. let's find out. Perry. Thanks, yeah. Elena.
It's being used in 6 other countries. Australia's been using it for a little over 100 years for their elections.
They came up with the secret ballot, so they've always led the way, haven't they?
Yeah. And interestingly enough, you know, I was reading a book of all of Abraham Lincoln's letters a year or two ago, and one of them stood out to me in the letter from 1843 to a gentleman named Martin Morris. He talked about, you know, I think if you guys listed, you know, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but, you know, listed 3 different candidates and, you know, one is a second choice, one is a second choice, and me is, you know, the third choice or something, I would really appreciate it. So the concept's been around for a long time. And these other states where it's being used have been using it for over 10 to 15 years.
So 6 other countries using it and a number of states and municipalities around the country. So it's in scattered use in America right now is the answer. John on the south side. John, good morning. What are your questions?
Good morning. Good morning. My question is, being that we are in this hyper-partisan nature in this country, how is ranked choice going to change that? And number two, really, we need to be talking about disbanding the Electoral College system because it robs our democracy. It's only 570 or 60 votes that count, and there's no law saying that they have to vote with the mass population that vote. Say if they voted for a Republican, and then the Electoral College says, no, we want a Democrat.
Yeah,
that is not democracy.
Yeah, thanks, John. You know, some states have signed on to an Electoral College compact where it would change the way their electors vote. Mm-hmm. But that's sort of another big reform discussion mm-hmm. that's been happening, yeah. whether or not we need to junk the Electoral College.
And that's definitely, you know, a more controversial topic that prefer not to really get into too much. But the little that I'll say about that National Interstate Compact about the Electoral College is that the one main thing I like about it, I'm still kind of learning about it myself, but the one thing I like about it is that it, instead of focusing on just 14 swing states, it makes every state be more in play if it were ever to pass. So it forces the politicians to do a better job and, you know, be on their toes more.
And to address John's question about how it impacts our hyper-partisan times, it's, again, it's the idea that the candidate must appeal to more than just their base of voters. They're earning first choice votes, but they're also earning a second choice vote in a close election. And in order to do that, you have to broaden support. You have to speak to people that may be outside of your direct base and your direct community, and you have to appeal to just a wider array of issues.
Patrick tweets or emails the show, how would ranked choice voting help with gerrymandering? Could it fit into something like proportional representation or some other effort to fix gerrymandered districts?
Yep. And there's also, you know, there's lots of places that are using it with multi-member districts also.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email from Bill. It seems like campaigns would spend less money on advertising with no runoffs. The political infrastructure establishment would have no incentive to support this. But your goal is to get this on the ballot, have this be an option by the 2023 local elections.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
So you've got a little under 4 years to do this. You're also launching a new organization called Rank My Vote Florida. That's launching next week. And let's promote an event you're having in Springfield this Thursday night. What's happening? It's at Hyperion, right?
Yep. Drew, you want to take that one since you live in Springfield?
Sure, absolutely. Yes, Thursday, we actually are doing this twice. We're going to be doing this Thursday, October 10th at Hyperion Brewing Company on Main Street in Springfield between 7th and 8th Street. It's a wonderful place, great folks. And we're also going to be doing it the following Wednesday on the 16th, and this is from 7 to 9 p.m., and it's going to be great. What we're trying to do is get a lot of awareness and education. So come on down. You can, if you enjoy craft beer, it's a great experience. Obviously, you can vote and rank choice vote your favorite craft beers. We'll show you that. That's a way for us to show you how the process works and be able to show you simply. I mean, we explained it here on air, and we so appreciate the opportunity to do so. It's an easier explanation even with visual aids.
I would probably put that their strawberry IPA at the top. I think that's one that they have that I like.
Okay, have you considered your second and third choices?
I'm going to have to think about that. This is a brand new idea. But so exciting.
Absolutely. And if you're not a craft beer drinker, it's a great environment. It's a very family friendly place as well. And we're going to have things like rank your favorite Jaguar player of all time. And then again, with the idea of seeing the process play.
You know, you just gave me a perfect segue because first, let me thank Perry and Drew with Ranked Choice Voting Jacksonville. Come on out to Hyperion Thursday night to learn more about it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for your time.
Speaking of ranking your favorite Jaguars, later in the hour, don't miss it as we speak with Mark Brunell about the NFL Legends Gala. But up next, a conversation with a path-breaking healer. The new president of the American Medical Association is here, Dr. Patrice Harris. We'll be right back.
World Affairs Council and UNF partnering to engage citizens in becoming better informed participants in the global community. October 22nd, New York Times national security correspondent David Sanger, The Threat to National Security in a 5G Era. Information, worldaffairscouncil.jax.org.
Experience performers live from the WJZT Soundstage. WJZT and the Florida Theater offer a unique and intimate setting to enjoy the sights, sounds, and energy in close proximity to musicians and performers.
And I can tell you exactly how I got 14 counts, which is I had 16 and two died.
Join us live from the WJZT Soundstage for upcoming performances by Mindy Abair and the Boneshakers, comedian Paula Poundstone and Jesse Cook. For dates and more information, visit floridatheater.com.
Take a drive with us into the blues horizon. The best in classic and modern blues. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. Right here on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. She's the first African-American woman to lead the American Medical Association. And Dr. Patrice Harris says it's long past time for the medical profession to address big health disparities in this country. She's here for the annual meeting of the Duval County Medical Society and their Future of Healthcare Conference. It's happening today and tomorrow at the Prime Osborne Convention Center. We've got a preview as Dr. Patrice Harris joins us now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And what are your questions for Dr. Patrice Harris, the new head of the AMA? It's 549-2937. First off, congratulations on your appointment, a path-breaking appointment for the AMA.
Thank you. It is such a wonderful and exciting opportunity to be the first African-American woman president of this great organization. I am the 174th president. I also want to say, though, we had another bit of history this past year when Dr. Sue Bailey was elected president-elect. So for the first time in our history, the AMA has three women who are, we call, the presidents of the AMA, the president-elect, the president, and the immediate past. So lots of history making at the AMA these days.
Very nice. And so you will be giving a keynote at the Duval County Medical Society's meeting and conference this week in Jacksonville. Can you give us a preview? What topics will you be touching on?
You know, I will be speaking about the role and the importance of physician leadership in general as we face this country's most urgent health problems. We also want to focus on innovation and how we train the next generation of physicians. Healthcare is changing quickly, And there are challenges that we face today that will be different from the challenges that we face tomorrow. So we need physician leadership in the moment. But we also need to make sure we're thinking about the future and how we can make sure that physicians have input into the next generation of healthcare delivery.
There's so much on the agenda for this conference that I want to get into, Doctor. But first, let me ask you about your role with heading up the AMA's Opioid Task Force. The opioid epidemic, of course, has touched this area, as it has just about every part of America. How do you see physicians playing a role in addressing this crisis?
Well, the AMA's Opioid Task Force was first convened in 2014 with the specific purpose of demonstrating physician leadership on this issue. And I have been chair of the task force since its inception. And we really want to make sure that we, number one, give physicians specific guidance and recommendations. And we did that with our first set of recommendations in 2015. And now the issue is around making sure that our patients, of course, this epidemic is an all-in epidemic. So physicians can't mm-hmm. solve this problem alone. It needs mm-hmm. government. It needs community. It needs everyone. But again, we wanted to figure out how to, first of all, demonstrate leadership on this issue, better coordinate and collaborate. Right now, we need to be laser focused on access to treatment. We know about 2 in 10 people in this country who need medication-assisted treatment for an opioid use disorder have access to it, 2 in 10. Mm. That is an unacceptable number. And so the AMA is laser-focused on that right now, eliminating barriers, eliminating prior authorization, making sure that parity laws are enforced.
Define parity laws. What's that?
Yes. So parity laws have been on the books federally for 10 years, and these were laws, in a nutshell, that required payers to cover mental health conditions in the same way they cover other conditions. Because as we all know, mental health conditions are medical diseases. They're chronic conditions, just like diabetes and high blood pressure. So these were laws on the books to make sure that payers do that. We also know that so many folks have access to treatment for an opioid use disorder because they have insurance, but only if the insurance is adherent or following the parity laws. So we want to make sure that states are investigating that and making sure that patients are not discriminated against when it comes to mental health disorders, particularly substance use disorders. And finally, we want to make sure that there is increased access to treatment. Now, grants are fine. Grants are great for pilot projects, but we need to make sure we have conversations around funding for a sustainable infrastructure to address substance use disorders in general.
One way patients have noticed a difference in how doctors deal with this is they're just not as quick to prescribe opioids as they used to be because they're so aware of how addictive they are. That has evolved over a period of years, hasn't it?
Yes, the number of opioid prescriptions have been decreasing since about 2012. And there's no question, and that was one of our original recommendations, that physicians should be judicious in our prescribing of opioids. But we also have to make sure that while there is a decrease in the number of prescriptions, there's access to other non-opioid, that's fine, non-pharmacological options to treat pain. Because as we discuss the opioid epidemic, we have to make sure we have the discussion in the context of treating pain.
Sure. Do physicians still classify pain as the fifth vital sign? I mean, the epidemic, it was well-intentioned, you know. When doctors started looking at pain as the fifth vital sign, they looked for ways to relieve the pain. Is there a shift in thinking now around that when a patient comes in and says, I'm in a lot of pain?
There has been a definite shift in thinking, and that is one of those regulations that, again, may have been well intended, but really had unintended consequences. And in fact, at the AMA, it is our policy that regulation, that pain be a fifth vital sign, is eliminated. Pain is important, no question. And of course, physicians want to alleviate suffering and pain in our patients. But we want to make sure that there are multiple options in our toolbox.
Yeah, sure. This is just one of the many topics you're going to be touching on at the Future of Healthcare Conference. everything from food insecurity, how to stop the spread of violence, and even looking at how to stop the spike in physician burnout and physician suicides. So there's a lot on the agenda here. And this sets the table for the you know, you're looking at how to position the healthcare field going forward.
Well, this is a great meeting. And actually, there's such a grand tradition of the AMA president or president-elect coming to present at this meeting. So I'm so happy to be here in a long line of past presidents. But you, I really like the topic or the title of this meeting is the future of healthcare, because all of the topics that you mentioned and that would be covered by me and others really speaks to what we should be doing going forward towards the future of healthcare. Gun violence, physician burnout is huge. The AMA is very engaged in that issue. And we have to make sure there are systemic solutions to physician burnout. And unfortunately, the increased numbers of physicians, medical students, and residents who are dying by suicide.
It's a full agenda. So we appreciate you giving us a quick window into it. It's the Future of Healthcare Conference in Jacksonville this week. The Duval County Medical Society has brought to town Dr. Patrice Harris, the new president of the American Medical Association. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
In a moment, Jaguars legend Mark Brunell in studio as we look at the NFL Legends Gala coming up this weekend. Don't go away. Welcome back. Well, Jaguars legend Mark Brunell just stepped into the studio. We're not going to discuss yesterday's game. That'll be in a few minutes.
Okay.
Maybe we can. But we also want to get a preview of the NFL Legends Gala taking place this Saturday. It celebrates 25 years of the NFL in Jacksonville, benefiting the Tom Coughlin J Fund. And you can meet dozens of your favorite former Jaguars players, including Mark Brunell. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
This sounds like a really fun event.
It's going to be a lot of fun. There's a lot to celebrate. And when you want to celebrate, what do? You throw a party.
Absolutely.
We are throwing a party. So 80 former Jaguars will be in attendance. It's going to be Saturday night, October 12th at the Prime Osborne. Black tie, red carpet. Channel 4 is going to cover it live. It's going to be a lot of fun. Live entertainment, DJs, something for everybody. It's going to be really cool. We're looking forward to, you mentioned we're giving to Tom Coughlin's J Fund. It's only fitting, Melissa, that we benefit the charity of the guy who really all brought us together in the beginning. And Coach Coughlin will be there, Shad Khan, and guys like Tony Baselli, Keenan Cardell, Jimmy Smith, Fred Taylor. The list goes on. The who's who of the Jaguars. And so a lot of these events, you have a sit-down dinner. You know, you have a live auction.
This is a
party. So there will not be any, you know, everyone's going to sit at table. We're not going to do that. Come talk to Fred. Come talk to Jimmy. Talk about the good old times and enjoy yourself. Have fun. It's open to the fans, of course. And we can't wait. We've been working hard on this thing. PRI Productions is putting it on. Randy Goodwin does a very good job over there. The Chamber of Commerce is essentially throwing it for us. They had everything to do with Jacksonville getting a team 25 years ago. So it's coming together, and it's only about Only a few short days away.
Yeah, you got to put on the tux and get all dude-ed up for this thing, don't you?
I do.
Do you often have an occasion to wear a tux?
No,
I don't. Does anybody? There aren't a lot of those kind of parties in Jacksonville.
No, there's not. We thought we'd do something different. Listen, it's black tie, and we call it dress to impress. There will be some tuxedos, but don't let that keep you from coming to the party. Put a blazer on or even just a collared shirt. We want you to look real fancy but if not, please still come. You can get tickets at jacksevents.com. That's the best way to get a ticket.
Right.
And plenty of room left. So it's going to be a fancy deal. I got to see if this tux still fits. I've lost a lot of weight since I've had that one.
Since you first got it, do you own one or rent?
I own one.
You own a tux.
Yeah.
Now, you're certainly a fan favorite, and so much love for you in the community from folks that have followed the team since the very beginning. What are you most commonly asked about by the fans? What do they want to know?
Right now, what do you think of Gardner Minshew?
What do you think of Gardner Minshew?
Everywhere I go, hey, how do you think Gardner's doing? I'm like, I'm watching the same games you are. It looks pretty good. I am impressed. We're getting to watch something that you just don't see very often. A rookie starting and playing at a very high level. Let's not forget this rookie was drafted in the sixth round. This doesn't happen. This mm-hmm. just doesn't happen. He's making some good plays. His numbers are great, but it's not the numbers that impress me. He's a competitor. There's no quit in him. He makes plays. He's fun to watch, moving around, extending plays. There's some, he needs to take care of the ball, and he's going to learn through all that. But right now, I've just been so impressed with him. I think he's a young kid that has a very bright future. I don't think we're just seeing something that's only going to last for a short amount of time.
You think he's the real deal.
I think he's the real deal. I think he's going to be around for a long time. Now, whether he's a Jaguar for a long time, I don't know how that looks when Nick Foles is healthy again. That will be interesting. But I know that when I watch this young quarterback, I'm really impressed.
There you have it, the Mark Brunell seal of approval for Gardner Minshew. But, for fans of the team, this really is a great opportunity to meet all of you guys and also benefit the Tom Coughlin J Fund. All the profits go to the J Fund, which is
absolutely
a great local. Actually, it's a national
charity.
They
do such a good job in helping kids with cancer and families that are going through that. They've been around for a long time, Tom. Puts his heart and soul into it. They raise millions of dollars every year. And you're right, it is national. They're helping mm-hmm. children and families all across the country. And so that's where unanimously, that's a big word for a former football player, we wanted to make sure that Tom got the proceeds.
Now, of course, people see you on TV regularly with Culpepper, who's
yes.
going to be up in a moment talking about the weekend's game. What is the one thing about Culpepper that we need to know that nobody knows, since you work with him so closely?
You know what, Cole, a couple things. One, Cole has a great sense of humor.
Yes.
Just kind of dry, very witty, just has the one-liners that keep me on my toes. And he just makes a lot of fun. And what people may not know, he makes it really easy for me.
Oh, that's good.
No, he really does. He's easy to work with. I've worked with other people in the past that it's sometimes just not as smooth, but I love working with Cole. He sets me up nicely. We work well together. I think we have a pretty good chemistry. He's a great guy,
you
a new
see his
dad.
Face right now.
He is
yes, he
awesome.
Is a new dad.
He's awesome.
Well, so are you, Mark Brunell. It's a pleasure. Go to jacksevents.com. Get your ticket now for Saturday night's NFL Legends Gala. Have fun.
Thank you.
Get that tux out of the.
We'll see you there.
You never know.
Okay.
I know who will be there, though. Probably Culpepper.
Absolutely.
He's up next. We'll be right back.
CNS Healthcare is conducting a study in your area for people with signs of memory loss. Do you know someone who is starting to slip away? More info at 904-281-5757 or at cnshealthcare.com to learn more about this Alzheimer's study. World Affairs Council and UNF, partnering to engage citizens in becoming better informed participants in the global community. October 22nd, New York Times national security correspondent David Sanger, The Threat to National Security in a 5G Era. Information, worldaffairscouncil.jax.org.
With great power, they say, comes great responsibility.
And the country is thirsting for leadership from someplace. And right now, the majority of the leadership seems to be coming out of the private sector.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the CEO of Dick's Sporting Goods. Next time on Marketplace.
Today at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Irishman George Fleming arrived in Spanish colonial Florida in 1783, and his family has been here ever since. I'm Ben Brookmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll talk with Scott Ritchie, author of the new book, The Flemings of Fleming Island and Historic Florida Family. We'll discuss 1930s interviews with black Floridians and prehistoric shell mounds. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Kansas is historically ruby red politically, but that is changing. So is its potential to provide green energy to the nation. We'll have the latest ongoing political drama as we head across America to Wichita, next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Sports Wrap-Up with Cole Pepper is sponsored by Black Sheep, Orsay, and Bellwether Restaurants.
Welcome back. Well, it was a missed opportunity over the weekend for the Jaguars in Charlotte. She's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too? The Jags losing to the Panthers, but they had a chance to win. Cole Pepper is here now with a look back. Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, Jaguars lost 34-27 to the Panthers. Their biggest problem was the lack of run defense. Jaguars gave up 285 yards on the ground to the Panthers. That's the second most in team history. Leonard Fournette ran for over 100 yards for the second straight week. Gardner Minshew threw for over 300 in the loss. That being said, there are some good signs with this team, according to head coach Doug Marrone.
Had a chance to win the game, but you know, I think you know their attitude, the way they're going about their business, you know, the team, that stuff is good. We've got to coach better, we got to play better.
Had three turnovers those are all on me. That can't happen. And you know, when stuff like that happens, sometimes you don't get you know, give yourself a chance to win. That's what I feel like we did.
And three turnovers, meaning three fumbles that Minshew was a part of, all three of them. You can't put them all on him, quite honestly, but he does have to do a better job of taking care of the football in that regard, as Mark mentioned just a moment ago. I do have a few thoughts coming out of this game. First, I think that Leonard Fournette is finding his identity. I think as a rookie, he wanted to be a speed back. But what he needs to be and what he's shown the past couple of games is that he's a rhythm back. Get him carries early in the game, and as the game goes on, he'll pop a big one. Secondly, the Jaguars need to get better and more consistent play out of Andrew Norwell. His contract is the biggest percentage of the salary cap of any Jaguars player, and he's getting pushed around too often, including on one of the fumbles where he just got pushed right back into Minshew by a guy who he outweighs by about 40 pounds. I wouldn't be surprised to see a little change there, maybe Will Richardson playing some left guard in the future. And finally, remember how the Jaguars lost games last year? 30-14, 40-7, 30-9, 20-3.
Pretty brutal.
Pretty brutal. Those were actual scores of losses last year. Hey, at least Gardner Minshew is making this thing interesting even when they lose.
He is, but I'm sure despite all the Minshew mania and all the excitement, the pressure's on this guy to win. People, I think, were going into this Charlotte game thinking, oh, we can't lose now. We've got this amazing quarterback. Well, not necessarily.
Yeah, there's no such thing as can't lose in the National Football League. The previously undefeated Kansas City Chiefs with the league MVP Patrick Mahomes playing at home at Arrowhead Stadium in the toughest place to play in the National Football League lost last night. So you can always lose in the NFL, no doubt about it.
Okay, let's talk college football.
Let's start with the Gators, who had a huge win on Saturday in the Swamp. Florida's defense made Auburn freshman quarterback Bo Nix look, well, like a freshman playing in the Swamp. Four turnovers Florida forced during the game, including three interceptions of Nix. Gators are now 6-0. They'll have their biggest test to date coming up on Saturday when they travel to undefeated LSU to face another top 10 team. After that, South Carolina, a bye week, and then they come to Jacksonville for the Florida, Georgia, Georgia, Florida game, depending on your perspective. This has an opportunity. Now, if the Gators can beat LSU, which is a tall task, this has an opportunity to be one of the biggest Georgia, Florida games ever.
Yeah.
Georgia's undefeated. They had a little more trouble with Tennessee than expected on Saturday, but did wind up winning. Jake Fromm, the quarterback, has been amazing. No interceptions this year, completing 77% of his passes. They should be undefeated when they get to Jacksonville. Coming up, they'll have games against South Carolina and Kentucky before coming here.
So in other words, we need to prepare for an even bigger RV city this time here at WJCT for the world's largest outdoor cocktail party.
I don't know if it can get any bigger than it is from that regard, but the impact on the college football landscape could be enormous, which is going to bring even more attention and more interest in the game, to be sure. Florida State, by the way, off yesterday. They faced Clemson on Saturday. Buckle up. The Tigers are number two in the country.
That'll be a tough game. Okay, let's also mention the biggest high school football rivalry in town, Reigns Rebalt, the 50th annual Northwest Classic, is going to be on TV this weekend.
For the first time ever, that great rivalry game will be highlighted. We'll broadcast it on Channel 4. Former Jaguar Kevin Hardy will join me on the call of the game. These two schools are so close to one another that a number of kids on each team will be playing against neighbors. In some cases, they're playing against the school that family members attended. I talked to a number of folks incredible. This past week about this rivalry. Somebody said, yeah, so I went to Rebalt, Grandma went to Reigns, and if Rebalt beats Reigns, I probably won't get fed at Thanksgiving. So that's the kind of rivalry this is. It's not just the game, though. It's a whole week of events, including a huge parade the morning of the game. Best high school football rivalry in town, bar none. The winner of the Northwest Classic will have bragging rights all year long.
Oh, you bet. Always good to see you. And it was good to have your TV buddy, Mark Brunell, here as well this morning. So follow Cole on Twitter for all your sports news and notes. Catch him on the air most nights at Channel 4. Thanks, Cole.
Thanks, Melissa.
Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum directs the show. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. We always need your feedback. Send those emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. On tomorrow's show, our own Lindsay Kilbride on the debut of her new podcast, Oddball, one of the strangest stories to ever come out of Jacksonville. You'll have to listen for that. That's tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, keep listening for some great music. We'll see you in the morning.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.